Hey, you guys, this is The Mask, and you guys are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. And you know what? You are smoking!
You're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello, and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and I'm flying solo. I hope you guys have been enjoying the beginning of the Altered Geek Spotlight episodes that have been coming out on Wednesday, being that there's only one so far that has been released, although there's four, five, six more in the can, ready for consumption on following Wednesdays. I hope you guys enjoyed the first one with Matt Betts, writer, poet, author, doer of things, pop culture aficionado, Godzilla and horror fan, sci-fi. So yeah, it was a lot of fun talking with him. It was a lot of fun talking with everyone that I've talked with so far, and you guys will kind of get that and hopefully enjoy what transpires upon the continuing episodes of this. This episode will continue to be the topic episode or the news episode that comes out on Fridays. And we'll have the interview episodes until I basically run out of people to talk to. Or pre-recorded episodes. So I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off here with a little bit of update news on myself. Again, have been let go. seems to be a trend. So if you're looking in the job market, let me know. But anyways, that aside, we've had quite a bit of cool stuff kind of pop up. Shortly before recording this episode, we got our first look at John Cryer as Lex Luthor. It was on the CW stream image, and it says Max Security, Lex Luthor. And then it's got him showing his face, more or less. he looks pretty menacing. Like, it's crazy to think about. This is the guy from Two and a Half Men who was like the bumbling idiot brother, and then you look at this and he's got the mustache and beard, like goatee looking thing, and just bald head, and he just looks mean. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see him jump back into television, and especially being a supervillain mastermind. I kind of look forward to seeing how he portrays it, because the last time we got a live-action Lex Luthor on television, it was Michael Rosenbaum, the animated voice actor of The Flash. And I don't know about you, but I'm kind of interested to see what they do with this. At first, I was kind of totally against any of these situations, but I think that they're kind of dying for a really good villain at this point. And eventually I'm sure they'll reintroduce Superman, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. Although it would be funny to have the Justice League or the Flash and Arrow and those guys kind of join over on Supergirl's world to kind of help out at some point. But I wonder if his introduction has something to do with kind of the Elseworlds play that has been kind of coming on. We'll find out more about that in the fall for sure. But it's kind of interesting that this is kind of going on. Side note, I've been playing Arkham Knight, and I, against other people's thoughts on this, on the storyline anyway, I've decided on normal mode. If it plays anything like Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, where you get to play the like normal plus or hard plus, where they when you beat the game, they unlock the other version of the game where you can use all of your gadgets from the get-go. I mean, you still have to collect them in-game, but you start out with them. You start out with all your upgrades. You get to continue to upgrade, which allows you more variability in the game as you progress. And there's also the fact that you can use the skins. So, like, I could use the 89 Batman skin on the character, and I could use it for the Batmobile. Now, if they had the animated series one, I would be all over that. Like, you wouldn't believe. But I'm kind of geeked for it. I decided to skip all the side stories, which everybody told me not to do because you missed part of the story. But I watched it all on YouTube when the game was new. I bought the game for like $6 a while ago. And so it was like a Christmas or Black Friday special, a New Year's special or something on stream, and I bought it for like $6. And so it wasn't a bad deal for me. I mean, I don't have any of the DLC. I don't have like the Game of the Year edition like Arkham City is. And I've beat that already. That didn't take me very long because I kind of knew what I was doing. Whereas Arkham Knight, I did not. And so like I'll play typically until I cannot figure out what I'm supposed to do anymore. I'll watch a YouTube video. I'll try it again. And if I just keep dying, I know that it's time to put the game up for a while. And then I'll get it back out later, another day. And then go at it again until I get stuck. But I did manage to get all the way to the point where you take down the Arkham Knight and his tank and the Cloud tank. And then I'm on my way towards... Actually, Ivy just died at the point where I'm at in the game. And so, you know, taking care of the Cloud Burst and all the toxin in the city. So now all the side missions open back up again. So I'm thinking, just for the sake of it, because I'm like, it says I'm 90% done with the Scarecrow storyline. I know where it goes from there. So I'm thinking, as I progress from here on out on the rest of this game, I'm going to take a step back of the Scarecrow storyline, and then I'm going to finish all the side storylines. Riddler, I doubt I'm going to finish, only for the fact that... his stuff usually is insanely difficult, and I really don't like the tanks floating around bothering me in the middle of the city. That it really bothers me. But I've been doing that a lot of the time when I've not been doing the interviews, and so it's been fun. Definitely fun. So side note here. They also dropped news that, well, Sam Jackson dropped news that Captain Marvel can apparently time travel, which is a very nice bit of information to know, which could mean that the reason why she's not aged a day in her life is because she immediately time travels from the point of the end of her movie, and... the transponder that Nick Fury has sends a message to her while in her movie, like towards the end of her movie, and then she appears after the snap. Or the other likelihood is that they have her come back during the Avengers movie or some point so that they can fight Thanos prior to the snap. But yeah, time will tell what they do with that. But it's interesting that they've revealed this revelation before the movie hits March 8th. And we already know that Spidey's back, and it's pretty much after the snap. Feige already pretty much said it is. It's after the events of Avengers Endgame, and so being that it comes out after Avengers Endgame, which comes out in April, so you get Captain Marvel, which sets up Endgame, and then you get Endgame, and then it sets up Spider-Man, and so then you get Spider-Man, and then you've kind of got the whole giant package of probably 8 hours of movie. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how this whole thing with the Marvel Cinematic Universe transpires. Unlike the cluster that is Warner Brothers, they've already said that Shazam is going to be its own standalone film, which honestly all the films should have been standalone and maybe have like they're one together if they're going to do it. Basically, you know, set up their universe first, have their couple of movies, have their couple of joint battles, and then separate. But the Warner Brothers is more or less leaked at this point or announced that they're going to recast the Batman, which we kind of knew, and they've stated that they're, you know, for the Matt Reeves film, that the Batman, the film, they're going to find out who the new Bruce Wayne is by November, which is almost like what happened with the original way back in episode one of Altered Geek, like, or early on when we discovered who the new Batman was going to be, or that we were insinuating what we were hoping the uniform and the Batmobile and all those other things would turn out. So get your speculations in now of who they may cast. It's going to be fun to see all the various rumors going around, trying to figure out who's the Batman, who's the new one. I don't know who they're going to cast. I honestly don't care at this point. But obviously going to go younger because it's going to go earlier in the timeline. But I'm okay with it. We got Affleck, and honestly, I enjoyed his look and his version of the character for what it was. Much in the same way I enjoyed Christopher Nolan's Christian Bale's iteration, but yeah, I mean, time will tell. Time will tell. We'll see what happens. It's still a matter of time. So it's going to be interesting in the movie verse, for a while. So we'll just leave it at that. So I don't know if you've been paying attention to the smartphone, war going on right now, but a lot of people are having fun talking about innovations that might survive or, you know, revive the slow smartphone sales. The conversation surrounding this is that, you know, yeah, they're incrementally changing, they're updating every, you know, few years, they're evolving upon their previous predecessors, and yeah, they're faster, they've got better processors, more storage, you know, more cameras, you know, it's, do we really need it? And that's kind of the thing that I've been playing around with for years. And I've been playing this game of will I, won't I get a new smartphone? Of course, every time I'm thinking about it, I get laid off. So I guess that's the answer to that question. But the funny thing is that the old smartphone still works as a phone, as messaging and web browsing, video streaming, social media, games. And why? The other thing is, you know, after they killed the 2-year contracts, phones are just expensive. And so I had fun looking at this article on Komando.com, which is Komando.com. And this radio technology host, Kim Komando, was talking about the fact that the problem with smartphones now is that the prices keep skyrocketing, and they killed the 2-year carrier contracts, which in turn people are just not upgrading to the latest and greatest smartphones like they used to. So they're talking about, you know, what could possibly turn it around. And their answer in this article is the foldable phones. And they mentioned how Samsung's got, you know, their, it might be named something of like Galaxy Flex or Galaxy Fold or Galaxy F or something, but it's essentially a foldable smartphone, and they unveiled it, you know, earlier this year, I guess they've been teasing it since 2013, which I really didn't pay attention to back then when this show started, although I may have noticed it and mentioned it in the podcast and totally forgotten about it, because, you know, let's face it, that's 6 years ago. But it remains to be seen how it works in actual function and how long it lasts, in the grand scheme of things. I know that they've got, you know, they're saying like these phones fold into a tablet with a 7.3-inch display, and, you know, can it be folded back into a smaller flip phone like Gadget for a 4.5-inch display? And I guess that they said that, you know, you can run multiple apps at the same time, like up to 3 or something, and on the bigger display and multi-active window. And so they basically 4 standard size displays, a tablet and a smartphone rolled into one, but it's going to cost like $1,800 to $2,500. Not something I'm going to spend the money on. And then you get the iPhones, which, again, you know, Samsung and Apple have been floundering in their prices with and their recent sales over the last couple of years, but really there's not been that much innovation to warrant people paying the prime dollar. Plus, for $1,800, I could buy a pretty sweet rig for my computer. I could upgrade it. I could fix this leak on the back of my sunroom. I could buy, you know, a couple of cheaper phones. I don't know. Like, it, there's so much other stuff I could buy. I could buy a fully decked out, like, Apple laptop for that price and not have to even worry about it. Like, I just don't get it, spending that much on a phone. But they said that, you know, some of these factors play into the fact that the iPhone sales were down last year too, and the, you know, weak demand for it and the expensive price tags, cheap battery replacements, and the less than compelling feature updates. And so, you know, the incremental upgrades on processors and storage aren't really cutting it. And then the fact that they may switch from the Lightning cable to USB-C, which it would be helpful because most people don't want to have to buy multiple cords. And I personally don't like the fact that you can't just use a random USB cord, which is another thing that keeps me away from them. But yeah, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of features, you know, like the 5G, longer battery, and honestly, better price are the two main things. Like, I could care less about the distance charging and notchless screens and fingerprint sensors. I want long battery life that I don't have to charge in the middle of the day, and I want better pricing. And I realize that comes with innovation. Now, the only thing that has me, like, remotely interested in the flip phone thing is because I used to have a Motorola Razr. And I loved that phone. The design, everything about it was awesome. Now, they're talking about the reboot, and mind you, I covered this a while back. And now, like, all the sites are starting to cover it, which is hilarious to me because now that the 3D renders are, like, publicly out there all over the place, people are starting to get into it. So, I'm having fun with this. But they've mentioned that the flip phone is going to make a comeback, and this time it'll be a cutting-edge foldable smartphone with a hinge and a flexible screen that folds inward, plus another smaller exterior screen. So that little tiny exterior screen that was on the original one is just going to be bigger on the front and be fully LCD or LED or whatever, OLED, however they're going to set it up in this, because I'm sure it's going to be expensive and it's going to be nice. But unlike Samsung's foldable phone, which folds out into a tablet-sized gadget, the 2019 Razr appears to be a smaller pocket-sized phone that expands into a regular-sized display, which, honestly, is something that I would prefer. I would like a regular smartphone, and then it folds into the compact kind of thing I used to carry in my pocket. And so with the shortage of, you know, smaller smartphones in the market, it kind of makes the best compromise between the pockets and, you know, display size. Apparently, Lenovo, though, that owns Motorola, plans to manufacture only about 200,000 of the phones, which are expected to have a still expensive price tag of around $1,500. I think if they can lower that, like, if they could make it, like, $900 or something, like, I think that more people would jump on board with it, being that it's already expensive to buy a phone. Like, I'm looking at the Google Pixel phone right now, and the only phone I would even jump remotely from the Pixel to is the Razr V4. Which in the renders look almost identical to the old Razr as far as the button placements, the little notch at the very bottom of the smartphone that kind of sticks out, and the way the outside looks and the side buttons. And I love the look of the old phone. So if it's even remotely close to the renders, I would be all over it. Although I wonder how many times you can bend that thing, as Michael Powers had mentioned, before that hinge wears out. And I know I kind of covered a little bit of this last week as well with the CES stuff, but to be honest, like, I'm kind of excited about this phone, if you can't tell. I love the original one, and so, like, to me, this is kind of the nice innovation. Plus, if I could just not have that gargantuan phone up to my ear and have the smaller one, and just hold it, or even Bluetooth. I'm thinking about getting another Bluetooth headset so that I can use that. But yeah, I'm kind of excited to see where this stuff goes in this technology as we progress through time on this. So I'm going to take a quick break, come out on the other side with a rather short topic, and we'll see where things go from there.
At this point, he probably is.
And we're back. So we've had multiple conversations about this pertaining to kids and technology and their exposure to various things. Like my kids got Kindle Fires for Christmas, and we weren't sure how they were going to play out as far as what they can use it for, what educational games and everything, because we kind of use it for part of the homeschooling. The hard part is finding games that are suitable and kind of teaching, and it's kind of difficult anyway. Like, we don't want anything super flashy. We just want something that kind of teaches and kind of repetitive in a way. But every time I think of that, I think of the old 90s games that we're learning that I used to see on DOS in like school. So they don't really translate well, and most kids wouldn't play stuff like that today because of what they've been exposed to. Even my kids, with their limited exposure, wouldn't find that very entertaining. Although they might, I don't know. I'd have to get access to some of it again on one of my many burnt CDs from the 90s. Interesting enough, there's a company called Pinna, which wants to be basically Netflix for kids podcasts, which is an interesting concept when you think about it, because really you don't know what's suitable for kids. I mean, yeah, you can look at the clean rating, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's actually like fully clean for kids or suitable for children. And so this service just launched, and it's ad-free, which it's a good concept, because honestly, you can't let your kids watch YouTube nowadays because half the ads that come up are for films or just random commercials that you don't really want them watching in the first place, or services that have nothing to do with the kids. And so having an ad-free streaming podcast service for kids, for like the podcasts themselves and audiobooks and music, is kind of a novel concept, and kind of one that I could kind of get behind, honestly, as a parent. So it's going to start at $7.99 per month, which is actually less than a Netflix subscription at this point, or $79.99 per year. So I guess it began as like a umbrella of Panoply Media, like a pilot project thing in 2017, and they spun it off into its own separate company. But it's backed by Slate and Panoply parent Graham Holdings. And some like former Scholastic executives are involved with this, or as the CEO, and they said that Maggie McGuire of Pinna, that's such a weird name, said that in this one app, parents can trust they'll find quality, age-appropriate entertainment in a variety of audio formats and story lengths spanning all of their favorite themes while covering multiple age levels, all free from ads. And it's, I guess, not the first podcast service in kids programming, which I didn't know, but I guess there's another one called Leela and Kids Listen, which kind of tap into that market, which I'm totally oblivious to any of this because I kind of hang out in the normal podcast realm. I've never even thought as far as the kids are concerned. But I definitely see that age-appropriate and safer stuff with no advertising for children is a much better option. But I guess Pinna is launching with a large catalog with more than 1,000 audio shows and podcast episodes, audiobooks, and songs. And it has partnered with other children's programming brands like Scholastic, Highlights, and American Public Media, which any kid, even from, you know, millennial age or before, remembers Scholastic or Highlights magazine. Scholastic had the plethora of books that filled the library, and in Highlights magazine was that giant time waster book that most people read, most people played in, and then they quickly discarded. But I guess they said, too, that the platform already features several award-winning podcasts, including the Peabody Award-winning podcast with Gen Z Media, The Unexplained Disappearance of Mars Patel, which I've never heard of, which tells you how much I pay attention to things like that. But I guess the Pinna app is available in the app stores, with plans to launch an Android version soon, which is unfortunate for me because I don't have an Apple device. Although, technically I do. I have an iPod. And so technically I could use that, but, I'm probably not going to. we have mostly Kindle Fires. We have three Kindle Fires. One's a, like, second generation, which is a dinosaur and won't install anything anymore. Completely useless, including for videos and various other things at this point. The two new ones are difficult to traverse. Like, there's too much operating system in the way. On their highly loaded Android version of Kindle. And so it frustrates my wife to have to use it, and honestly myself too, whereas I would just prefer to use an Android tablet at this point, or some other device entirely. But yeah, I think it's kind of interesting though that kids are starting to get content that's specifically for learning. And honestly, like, I think I'm going to try it out and test it and see what happens, just to find out more information about it, because that might be another avenue. I know LeVar Burton has a service. It's not podcast, it's like video, but it's LeVar Burton Reads. And he, or LeVar Burton Kids, and he has LeVar Burton Reads, which is basically a live tour or a tour that goes around, and he picks different pieces of short fiction and reads it to kids. He has a podcast, and he's also kind of he does award-winning Skybrary app programming, and he's also got a plethora of other things that he's just involved with, including his LeVar Burton website, where he has various things that are in the realm of, like, Mr. Rogers. So, any really any of these guys that are educational like that, I can get behind. So, yeah, I thought it was kind of an interesting concept and something to kind of explore if you're somebody with kids and trying to help them learn and kind of have that audiobook or podcast or music experience that we get to have as an adult, but without all the having to worry. And so I would be interested in finding out more about the services themselves to see if they're actually what they claim to be. So I think that about wraps this episode up. We've covered a lot of ground. Gonna have more topical based stuff coming up. I'm hoping to reconnect with Booth Ninja in the future, and Birdman Dodd, so we can have an actual episode of the content in the podcast. So we'll see what happens. And until next time, thank you for listening. And you can get a hold of us on the Twitters at Altered Geek or at SCP21 for myself. And until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.